Time of year where people, I think, used to do New Year's resolutions. People like to make decisions about their lives and set some goals for the year. When I first started ministry, way back in the year 2000, I know I don't look like it, but I've been doing this stuff for 20 years now. Nobody disagreed with me on that. But people in those days were making New Year's resolutions. I remember saying, how many of you make a New Year's resolution? Like 80, 90% of the room would raise their hand. And then last year, I asked the same question on this particular Sunday, and like two people raised their hand for a resolution. And so I don't know that people do that sort of thing anymore. I still hear about it, but I don't know that people are making lots of resolutions. Because I think of this, I think a lot of people, if they recognize a change they need to make, they don't wait until the calendar flips in order to do it. They just say, I'm going to make this change. I need to make a change. I'm going to do it. So I don't know that lots of people are making New Year's resolutions, but you know what people do make? Memes. And they make memes about New Year's resolutions. So I just want to share with you a couple of New Year's resolution memes that I found to be maybe poignant or funny this year. Thank you to Google for producing these for me. So if you could show some of these on here. Do we have those? All right. Oh, the screen's down a little bit. But so I don't know if you can see Pinocchio there. It says, people be like, I'm going to start working out this year. And his nose grows a little bit. That happens for people. This guy makes a New Year's resolution. I'm going to run at least 3 days a week. And sprains his ankle on January 2nd. This one. Hey, you won't break your New Year's resolutions if you don't make any. That's where most people are these days, I think. I'm making one. Go ahead. I love this one. It's Nicolas Cage, if you can't see it very well. Made a New Year's resolution to stop swearing, and then I came to work. I can see him saying that, actually. Go ahead. This is how I'll be spending New Year's. I think that's pretty much what we did, just hanging out. Not too much going on with that. I think I would have one more on there. Oh, yeah. This is Dr. Evil, good luck with your New Year's resolutions. Not very good on the voices there. So how many of you thought about and searched for the perfect Instagram caption or made the right meme to capture your thoughts on New Year's? There might be more of you who did that than made a resolution. I don't really know. But really, behind the idea of New Year's resolution is the idea to improve it yourself, improve your life somehow, to make a change or make an impact, a difference in your own life, and to make things go better, like right here, right now, and for the future. And it usually goes something like this, and I'll personalize it for myself so as not to embarrass anybody but myself, which I'm usually good at doing anyway, to embarrass myself. But it goes like this. It's like a four-step thing. First, I realize that I have a problem. I have something out there that is not quite right, something that I need to change in my life. And so, two, then I create a goal that will hopefully help alleviate that problem or make that problem resolved, a resolution to alleviate the problem. So I set a goal. And then number three, I develop a plan so that I can accomplish the goal, right? So here's the action steps I'm going to take to make sure that I execute that plan and get to the goal. And then the fourth thing is I'm going to set up accountability structures so that everybody will help me get along towards that goal as well. That's really how it should go, but I think oftentimes we usually fail around three or four. Like I know the problem, and I'm going to have this resolution or this goal that I'm going to go for, but where we fail is to create a plan and the accountability structures to execute the plan. Now I'm finally starting to see a couple nods like, yep, that's what I do. I skip out on the plan part, and I definitely don't really tell anybody. That way, if I do fail, they won't hold me accountable, and I won't be embarrassed. I know how that goes. So here's what how it goes for me. Like, all right, I do this actually with eating, and in particular, this Thanksgiving to New Year's season, my belt has audibly protested the holiday season, all right? It literally squeaks when I walk because it's like, Dave, you ate too much. Like, you know what I'm saying? It like, and then Abby got me one for Christmas. So I'm wearing my new belt that doesn't audibly protest that anymore. So I'm going to say to myself, the girthy part of the middle needs to get smaller because I ate too much and my belt doesn't need to talk to me anymore, okay? That's the goal, right? That's the goal. The plan would be eat less, work out more, right? And then I would tell people, all right, you need to help me eat less and not, and or excuse me, eat less and work out more. But the thing is, I don't really want to tell anybody that because I really like to eat. I like the eating part. How about I just do the workout more part so I can eat more? And then, but that's how I got in this problem in the first place. I keep eating more. So maybe you have this trouble too. Maybe that's not the same exact problem that I have, but you have this thing where there's a problem out here. I know I need to fix this problem. I need to create a plan or a goal and then a plan to get to that resolution of that problem. And I probably ought to have accountability structures there. Or maybe you don't even have a problem that's there to fix. God bless you. If you don't have any problems that you need fixed, I would like to learn your ways, to be honest. Teach me. How do you not have problems that you need to fix personally? But more likely, your biggest problem is that you don't do self-reflection well. Personally, I got 99 problems, and self-reflection ain't one of them. I tell you that. All right, so we looked at all Advent season, those 4 weeks leading up to Christmas, on how God speaks to us. And over the course of 4 weeks, we gave you 10 ways that God speaks to you and speaks to me. Now, in this series, though, we're going to paint a picture of what God's vision is for the believer's life in terms of spirituality, relationships, finances, education, and physical well-being. All of those five areas. Now, I'm not saying you guys have particular problems in any of those areas or all of those areas. I'm not saying that. But what I am saying is that God has a vision for you. God has a preferred way of life for you. And what we want to do is paint that picture of the vision. Last Sunday, our friend Reggie said it this way. God has a purpose for you, and it doesn't matter what you've been through. He has a purpose for you. I'll put it this way. God has a vision for you. Because it fits better with what I'm saying. But it's the same thing. It's the same thing. God has a vision for you, and we don't always live into that vision. But no matter what you've been through, no matter what you've done, no matter the things that have happened to you, God has a vision for you. And with it being the year 2020 now, we've stepped into this new year, that vision can be made crystal clear in your life. And you can live out your 2020 vision. First couple weeks that we have of this is going to be sort of introductory as we dive into what it means to have a vision and see a vision. But then we're going to get specific about God's economics of family and spirituality and relationships and even finances. Now, whereas the Advent series was prescriptive, okay, prescriptive in that we gave you 10 ways to find out how God is talking to you. This one's not going to be that way because I can't lay out 10 things that is a vision for you. This is more principles, okay? These are God's principles for living God's vision in various areas of your life. So then it's up to you to find out if God is speaking to you in that particular area, if God is speaking to you for this particular vision. I just kind of want to get that out of the way. If you're looking for me or anybody else in this room to tell you exactly what God's vision is for you, then you've stepped into the wrong room because we're not here to tell you, here's what God's saying to you. We're here to say, how can we help you discern what God's saying to you? And then let's walk it together. That's the accountability piece of the puzzle. So the passage I've chosen today to help us with this introductory message on vision is from Habakkuk, yeah. I reach way back in the Old Testament, the minor prophets, to get this message. And I think you'll be surprised at how much it fits for us. But you're going to have to say the word Habakkuk with me. It's a name. Can you say Habakkuk? All right, so you're awake. You can say it. All right, so here's a little background on Habakkuk. He was a prophet. He was probably a professional prophet because he refers to himself twice as the prophet Habakkuk. And he probably went to school for that, and he had training in it. Not only was he gifted and blessed with it, but he was a professional. You know, this was his job. He lived in Judah. This would be after the time of where Israel had split. It's like after Saul and David and Solomon, and then the kingdom split. He was in Judah, but it was before the Babylonians had taken over. And in fact, it was towards the end of their independence, probably around 610 to 605 BC, before one of their, the Babylonians attacked them twice, actually. So it was before that first attack. But the conquering of the Babylonians over them, it was imminent. Like, it's going to happen, and it's going to happen soon. A lot of the Old Testament prophets write to warn about the upcoming destruction from Babylon, but Habakkuk instead writes questioning God about why God would do these things. Now, have you ever questioned God? Nobody's ever questioned. Yeah, maybe all the time. Yeah, like we are told, don't question God. But it's biblical to question God. I don't think we should question God to the point of doubt where it destroys our faith, but to question God to find out who, what, when, where, why is okay, to clarify the vision that God has for you. So Habakkuk's questioning God. There's only three chapters in the whole thing. It's a tiny little book, but the first two chapters are entirely made up of Habakkuk questioning God. And he just basically lays it out. His point is, God, you promised us this land, you gave us this land, and now you are going to use the evil Babylonians to kick us out of the land that you gave us. What the heck? That's basically what he's getting after in the first two chapters. But his specific question, very, very early on, first chapter of the book, he says, how long, O Lord? How long? Have you ever questioned God's timing? Yeah. Yeah, how long, O Lord? Hey, God, you promised me that you would, dot, 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 you fill in the blank. You promised me that you were going to give me a, you promised me that this job would turn out. God, you promised that this relationship would be like, dot, dot, dot. How long are you going to leave me here in this mess, like this? How long, O Lord? That's the first question. Second question he asked, why this way? Why do you got to do it this way? And he's asking why God has to use the Babylonians. I'm sure it's a question you've asked before. I hear this a lot after the passing of a loved one, especially if it was in just horrific circumstances. Why does it have to be this way? God, you're teaching me a lesson here, but why did you have to use this circumstance to teach me this lesson? I have a friend on December 20th, I think that was the 21st, his mom, like 68 years old, something like this, mom got up, got ready to go to a basketball game for the grandkids, suddenly had an excruciating headache to the extent they took her to the emergency room where they discovered she had an aneurysm burst and she had five more aneurysms there ready to go. They did surgery on three of them. Fast forward now to, that was a Saturday. Two Saturdays later, they removed all life support. Can you imagine? And so I sat with him at the hospital, and he's saying, I know I got to learn from this, but why this? Why this? And I don't think that God causes horrific circumstances to happen to you so that you'll learn something. I think those things happen because we live in a fallen, broken world, and sometimes horrific circumstances happen because we made bad choices anyway, and it's a consequence of sin. I'm not saying that for him. sometimes just our bodies just don't work right. They're fallen and broken. How long, O Lord, are you going to keep my friend in this pain? Why, O Lord, do you have to use this method? Those two fundamental questions have been asked of God for at least 2,400 years since Habakkuk. We've been asking those questions as a human race. How long, O Lord? Why you got to do it this way? To think about that in terms of a New Year's resolution, you recognize there's a problem. You might have something going on in your life, something that's perhaps correctable. And you might say, there's this problem, Lord, how long am I going to be in this problem? And why you got to fix it this way? The reason why we set goals is because we see a problem or we see a lack, and we ask God those questions. And I want to tell you that no matter what your situation in life is, no matter the pain and the darkness you're going through, no matter the questions that you might have, how long, O Lord, why you got to do it this way, I want to just say, God has a vision for you. All those dark things going on, God has a vision for you. And part of the realization of that vision is to go through the fire of the problem. Those things shape you. They shape us. The forge, the crucible of fire makes the metal stronger. It makes it come to life. It makes it bring beauty. And you can't get the result. You can't realize the vision without going through the fire. Habakkuk shows us that questioning God is not a sin. It's seeking clarity and pleading with God to bring to you to the place of vision. Habakkuk is asking these questions. And then in chapter 2, verse 1, he basically says this. Remember the old call-in like radio program where they would call in and ask a question and say, okay, I'll hang up and wait for your answer. Anybody remember that? Like, they all do podcasts now. You can't call in anymore. But he says, okay, I'll hang up and wait for your answer, God. I'll wait and see how God corrects me. Or more precisely, I'll just read it to you, chapter 2, verse 1. I will stand at my watch and station myself on the ramparts. I will look to see what he will say to me and what answer I am to give to this complaint. So he's like, I'll just wait here and see what God says. And then this is what God says in response to Habakkuk. This is chapter 2, verses 2 through 3. And the Lord answered me, write the vision, make it plain on tablets, so he may run who reads it. For still the vision awaits its appointed time. It hastens to the end. It will not lie. If it seems slow, wait for it. It will surely come. It will not delay. And we're going to break those verses down and apply it for ourselves, but God goes on to give the full explanation to Habakkuk about the situation, why the Hebrew people needed correcting, how long. He answers, how long, and why you got to do it this way. But for us, when determining the vision, when looking at a goal or a resolution, when thinking of a problem resolution, a New Year's resolution, whatever it is, these principles from verse 3 and 4 are good for us today. And the first one is, write it down. Write it down. It was funny, during Donuts with Dave, Charity's passing out these little pieces of paper. And if you have a New Year's resolution, write it down. I was like, wait, that's the first point of my sermon. Did you like cheat and look ahead? So here's what I wrote down. I wrote down mine. You can't read it, so there. I'll share it with you because one of the points is to be accountable. So I do daily reading in the morning, and I've decided, I've been doing Bible through the year programs for a long time, and I decided it's just a lot of content that I find that I'm just reading words on a page or on a screen rather than digesting it. So I've decided to take a Bible through a three-year program and journal about it. So I'll be writing more every day. That's my resolution. I found a problem. Now I'm giving you to keep me accountable to it. All right. Write it down. Write down the vision. God says, write the vision. That's very clear. As you discern what God is saying to you, write it down. I feel like there's some kind of permanency to that. And I even did mine in Sharpie Black Magic Marker. It was right there. Maybe before, though, we need to think about what is the vision? What is the vision? I don't mean like a dream or something like that, or you just see an alternate reality. I think those things are real, but I'm not exactly talking about that. A vision is this, a picture of a preferred future. Okay? I can see a preferred future where this problem is no longer there. It's seeing the end from the beginning. Like, all right, this is day 5 of 2020, and by the end of 2020, here's where I ought to be personally or whatever. Knowing the purpose that God has for your life. Like, this is what Reggie was talking about last week. I knew all along what his purpose would be and how he was, didn't know how he was going to get there, but he knew it had to get there at some way, sometime. So what is the vision for your life? What are you meant to do? So you look at the end of your life, and what do you see that you've accomplished? What are the people going to talk about when they're at your funeral? What, where and what will you have, and who will you have made your impact with? I realize that's a big, giant ask, all right? So let's go smaller. Let's just talk about 2020. What does December 31st, 2020 look like for you? Or maybe what's your vision for this decade, since we're in a new decade? Although there's discrepancy on that, right? Doesn't there some people say it doesn't start till 2021, right? Isn't there people who say, well, actually, the kids and I were talking about that. There's the well, actually people. Well, actually, it doesn't. Like, all right, leave it alone. It's a new decade. That's how you guys saw me when you were all saying it's Christmas, and I'm like, well, actually, it's Advent. And today, by the way, is the last day of Christmas season, just so you know. So Merry Christmas, the last day. All right, what does it look like at the end of whatever time period that you have in your mind, the end of this year, the end of the decade, the end of your life, where is it? I think you need a vision to get there. You have to plan for it. You have to prepare for it. Nobody has stumbled upon greatness. It's careful. I don't think you accidentally walk into it. I have written, except for the Kardashians and Paris Hilton. They stumbled on theirs, but they're not great. That's why I don't want to say it. They're not great. They're just famous. And they're famous for being famous. And that's all they have. Maybe they're great people. I don't know. I've never met them. I'm talking about living into the vision that God has for your life. Don't take this part lightly. If you're just going to, don't just write something down, okay? Don't just like, I'll write this down and whatever. No, this is built upon what we've talked about, those 10 ways to hear God's voice in your life. If God is speaking to you, if God's really talking to you, what is he saying? Write that down. Write that down. Make that permanent. And then here's the second thing. Make it plain. This is 3B. Make it plain on tablets. Just means make it clear. Make it understandable. Simple. Make it a reachable goal. And I think the tablets part means make it visible. Make it obvious. If it's on a tablet, and I'm not talking about, an iPad. That's a different kind of tablet than what Habakkuk had. He was talking about chisel of stone, That's permanent. But you can break those too. You can break the tablet. You can use whiteout if you used a pen. You can erase it if you want to. But make it so it's plain and visible so people can even be inspired by it. That's the next point. But make it so it's obvious what it is. Make it public so people can keep you accountable to it. They can keep you in check. And these days, a lot of people use social media to do that. They'll set out their fitness goals or whatever, and they'll put online all their progress pictures, the befores and the afters. Okay, they'll have their goals in mind that they want to do. They'll have updates. And I think it's a good accountability tool. However, it can go into narcissism very quickly because you say, "Look what I have done! Look what I can do! Look at me!" Because we're not supposed to bring glory to ourselves. We ought to bring glory to God in all things. We don't boast in what we've done. Look at me, what I've done. Look what God has done in me. All right, so write it down. Make it plain. And then this one, make it inspirational. The verse says, so he may run who reads it. So he may run who reads it. I like that. He may run who reads it. Not run to go read it, but after you read it, you're inspired to run. You got to go. You can't help but go do the thing because I've read it. Now I'm inspired to go do it. This is creating applicable steps, action steps to get to the vision. So here's the vision, but I'm taking steps to accomplish it, to live into it. So I've written the vision and the goals, but I just can't sit around and let those goals come to me. Got to have the motivation to reach for it, to go through the fire even, the difficulty to accomplish those things, to end up becoming the person that God has created me to be. I think it should be inspirational to you to do that. It's for yourself. But I think also it's inspirational to others, so that others might read it and maybe be inspired to do the same thing, to also become the person that God has created them to be. And then when life starts getting difficult, when it's hard to accomplish those action steps anymore, at the point where you're like, it's not worth it to pursue this thing anymore, like I'm just too tired, I'm not going to bother with it, then you go back and read the thing that you wrote down, and it might inspire you to carry on. I go to the gym, Josh Han and I go 3 or 4 times a week, and we knew coming into this last week that it would get busy after Wednesday, right? Because it's New Year's resolutionists, right? And so on Wednesday, let's see, Wednesday was the first, so Thursday we get in there, and it was busy. They were busier than normal. There was a lot of people there, more than normal, and we said, New Year's resolutionists, aren't they cute? And then Friday came, and it was raining cats and dogs. Do you remember Friday? And we were like the only two people there. And we decided either they don't like rain, New Year's resolutions don't like rain, or they take Fridays off. You know, either way, I'm not sure. Hopefully you all come back on Monday and Tuesday and keep coming back. If you write it down, maybe you'll be inspired to carry on. In 2012 through 14, I was in a pattern of journaling a lot, and that was when the vision for all that we're doing here today in the cafe, that was when all those things came. And I wrote them down in my journal. And they seemed crazy at the time. And then years passed while we did not accomplish anything that the vision had for us that I had written down. Time went on and it was difficult. People weren't coming along like we thought. There wasn't money there. Nothing was happening like it should have. But I would return back to those journal entries and I would read them and I'd get inspired again. At the time where I would just give up and say, you know what, it's not worth it. It's not happening. Forget about it. I'll move on to something else. I could point back to where that vision was, and I would be inspired to carry on and keep going and keep going. So make it inspirational. And then lastly this, be patient. You got to be patient. For still the vision awaits its appointed time. It hastens to the end. It will not lie. If it seems slow, wait for it. If it seems slow, wait for it. It will surely come. It will not delay. The day you receive the vision is not the day it is accomplished. Thank you. I'm going to say it again and see if anybody else agrees with me. The day you receive the vision is not the day the vision is accomplished. There we go. Because we're largely an impatient people. We have everything instant, right? We've had drive-through takeout forever. You know, you go through the Wendy's and drive-through window. We've had that forever. We've got Keurigs with instant coffee. Within seconds, we can have a piping hot, decent cup of coffee. Crock-pots that take forever, right? All day long cooking. We have Instapots now, where within 40 minutes, you can have a whole turkey done for you. And it tastes just as good as before. We even have instant graham. Yeah. Instagram. And then we have on-demand TV. In fact, most people, like everybody's going to streaming service now. It's hardly anybody's on cable and regular like airwave stuff. It's on demand so that you can watch whatever you want to watch, whenever you want to watch it, wherever you happen to be. I can pull up my phone and just watch any show that I want to watch and probably even stream it to the thing somehow so you all can see it too. I don't know how to do that, but I probably can. So we don't like to wait. But God doesn't work in our timing. The day you write down the vision isn't the day that you receive that vision. I mean the accomplishment of the vision. You'll receive the vision, but it's for a future time. It's for a future day when you will accomplish that. You might even have the goal of accomplishing or being something by this time next year, and it may not happen. God's timing is just different than ours. And it won't be a failure to have not accomplished that thing by the end of this year, okay? It's just not ready yet. It's not time yet. Here's a sports analogy for you. When I thought of this, it was really applicable, but since the Patriots lost yesterday, it harms my analogy. But if you're aware of the New England Patriots NFL football team, they go to the Super Bowl and win it about every other year. I think they go every year and then they win about every other year. They've done a lot of winning of Super Bowls lately. All right, over the last 15, 20 years. I read in about 2008 an article that was interviewing Bill Belichick, the coach, said, how do you do it? Like, how do you maintain this kind of level of excellence? And he said, a lot of people will get concerned at the beginning of the season because if you ever pay attention to them, they'll lose two or three games out of the first four or five every year. They'll just lose a couple. And people, all the news media will be like, oh, they're done. That's it. They're over with. But Bill Belichick said, we don't prepare our team to win in the first quarter of the season. We're preparing our team to win at the end of the season. We're trying to create a team for week 16, 17, 18, 19, and whatever the Super Bowl is. We want to be able to win then. I'm creating a vision, seeing what I have in my team over the first 3 weeks. We'll take a loss. We'll take two or three losses. It doesn't matter now. We need to be winning at the end of the season. Now, they didn't do that this year. They had some struggles and some outside circumstances, and I'm happy about that. But you don't need to win every game early in the season. The point is to accomplish the vision by the end, to stay in there for the long haul, to go through the flames and the fire, the struggle, the difficulty, in order to realize the vision that is in you. So be patient. It says, if it seems slow, wait for it. It will surely come. It will not delay. You know, God took 40 years to shape the Hebrew people in the wilderness. 40 years. I turned 42 in 10 days. I can't imagine waiting for 40 more years for a vision to come through. I'd be 82. I don't think I'm even going to care then. It may take 40 years, though. It might take 40 days. It might take 40 hours. I don't know how long it will take for you, but I guarantee you, God has a vision for you. Reggie told us last week, his life is living proof. It doesn't matter what you've done. It doesn't matter where you've been. It doesn't matter what kind of crap has happened to you. God has a vision for you. We're going to sing this song. The bridge says, there's no shadow that won't light up, mountain you won't climb up. You're coming after me. There's no wall you won't kick down. There's no lie you won't tear down. God, you're coming after me. God has a vision for your life. He's going to keep pursuing you and coming after you and after you and after you until he realizes his vision in you. He only wants you as his child. And he wants you to thrive and live into his vision for your life. And he will cut through all the crap that's been storing up inside of you and bring you into his purpose. I want to close with the first couple of words from Habakkuk that I started with in verse 1. He says, I will stand at my watch and station myself on the ramparts. I will look to see what he will say to me and what answer I am to give to his complaint. Even if you are in the darkness, even if you can't see the vision yet of God's purpose for your life, and you're just kind of in this land of like, I don't think God has much for me. Even if you're questioning God, how long, oh Lord, are you going to keep me in this place? Oh God, why do you got to use this way to teach me whatever? The challenge is to stand. Habakkuk says, I will stand at my watch. I'm going to stand here. You have to stand, even if you don't know what the answer is. You stand. You're not ready to run yet. You don't have the vision yet. But you got to stand there and be ready. You pray to God. You ask for his vision. You say to yourself, do you hear what I hear? Is this from God? Is what I'm getting from God actually here? You got to stand at your watch and pray to God that he will answer you. Now, I don't know where you are in the mix of it. I don't know if you're at the point ready to write something down. I don't know if you're ready just to be inspired and just take off running and go, or if you're just barely trying to hang on to standing. Let me just stand. But if you're struggling, just do that. Today, just stand. You ain't got to run towards a goal yet. Just stand and wait for what God has for you. He has a vision for you. Maybe over the next 6 or 8 weeks, he'll reveal it to you, and we want to help you identify that. We're going to close with prayer and a song, and I hope that you are able to stand and be ready for what God has for you. Let's pray. God, this message is not just for me, it's for somebody. You probably know better than I do where each of us are and where we need to stand with you. We ask, God, that you would work in us a vision for each of our lives individually, a vision for us corporately as a church, that you would break through darkness, answer questions that we might have so that we can understand what it is that we're to be and realize that vision. But if somebody in here is in that hardest place of darkness and can't even see the light of a vision, help them to stand. Just stand and receive. So break through the mountains and the lies. Break through all of that and work in our hearts today. In Jesus' name, amen. Let's stand together as we sing.